In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Welcome. This is the I Spy Radio Show. So very glad you're joining us today as we celebrate our independence. Yes, it is our annual 4th of July show, Independence Day. It's like Christmas for patriots. We all know July 4th, 1776. But as I was reading up for this year's show, I came across the Quebec Act, and that reminded me of another July 4th, the first meeting of then-former President Ulysses S. Grant and the Emperor of Japan on July 4, 1879. Commodore Matthew Perry had sailed into the forbidden waters of Tokyo Bay back in the 1850s to try to open Japan to trade. Japan had been largely closed to the West, but confronted with the reality of the advanced steam-powered American ships, the Japanese realized they were 100 years behind the rest of the world. They began a huge modernization and westernization effort, and by the time Grant met the emperor, they had made tremendous strides. Naval and military academies, shipbuilding, expanding trade. And as part of this, the emperor was very interested with America and the freedoms its citizens enjoyed. When he met Grant, he was wrestling with giving his people some sort of representative government and to extend to them some of the same freedoms that Americans had. Here, Grant urged caution. Because, he said, the moment you hand suffrage and representation and rights to your people, you give it to them forever and will never be able to get them back. The Quebec Act, which we won't be able to get into today, but you can look it up, was one of the facts alluded to in the Declaration. It exemplified what the colonists were going through. It threatened to end representative government in the colonies. Like Grant said, our founders had become used to governing themselves, and they had taken to heart the lessons from their own British history, that under the rule of a king, rights were temporary and they could be taken away. Our founders had gotten a taste of freedom. They wanted to be able to pursue their own dreams as they saw fit. They wanted a society free of a police state where you could speak your mind, worship God the way you wanted, and not be terrified the police would come knock down your door for something you said. We see elements of this today. On today's show, you'll hear echoes of our founders and what is happening right here in Oregon. Rural people are tired of people in Portland telling them how to run their farms, how they can or can't use their land, how to run their business, even what they're allowed to do for business. They showed up by the thousands at the Timber Unity Rally in Salem. Our founders knew this struggle, what it was like to have a tyrant for a king, to have the king send the police after you when you dared to stand up with a different opinion, or have the king tell you how to run so much of your life, or what you could or couldn't do for business, and of course, excessive taxes on everything. Although at least King George never tried to tax the air they breathed, but I bet he would have loved a carbon tax. I'd like to welcome now Greg Leo. He is our in-house historian. He's also a government and public affairs consultant to government, tribes, corporations, and individuals. If you need help with appealing to the better nature of someone in government, or if you need help dealing with government, he is the one to call. Greg@theleocompany.com. And we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Greg, it's great to talk to you again.
Thank you, Mark. It's always good to be with you on the 4th of July.
Yeah, I absolutely cannot believe this is our 9th annual show. That just seems almost unreal.
So we've had some great topics over the years.
Yes,
it's been great.
Yes, we absolutely have. We've talked about the 4th of July on the Oregon Trail. That was a standout for me. We've talked about July 4th during the Civil War and just so many other things, too, that we've looked at over the years. And this year, I thought it'd be really good to actually look at the Declaration of Independence itself, because for so much of American history, and even in some areas today, they do actually read the Declaration of Independence as part of the July 4th celebrations. And they have that long list as to why they're essentially arguing for divorce. And I'd like to look at some of the facts here, because you know it might be that people just aren't really familiar with that. So let's kind of dig in. And I'm just going to read this. It says, the history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. So let's look at some of these facts. There's this one, quote, he has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend them. So what laws or types of laws hadn't been passed that the colonists wanted but were essentially being ignored?
Well, there was all sorts of laws, particularly related to trade and taxation that the colonists had. And of course, they moved the seat of the government away from the people so that the people couldn't be there to make their case. And so primarily, I think we're talking about the Tax Act and the Paper Act, you know, where they all pieces of paper were taxed. And of course, the British were trying to pay for the costs of the what we would know as the French and Indian Wars. They thought that the colonial folks in North America ought to pay a larger cost for the foreign war against the French that the British had in North America. And of course, that brought about taxation without representation. And part of the way there was no representation was there was no way for local colonials to have a conversation with the authority of the crown.
Yeah. Well, it really is interesting to watch how some of this is unfolded. It really does remind me so much of what's going on right now here. Here in Oregon, where the Democrats that are in charge are looking at every possible thing they could tax. And we certainly saw that, I think, with the colonists, too, who just got fed up with tax after tax after tax. You mentioned this notion of taxation without representation, and that issue of representation was actually very important to the colonists. And it's really, as I said, it's kind of fun how we're seeing that play out right now in Oregon. There was a rally just this week at the steps of the Capitol. Rural people are absolutely tired of not being listened to. They've had it with an oppressive government, thanks to voters in Portland electing a supermajority of hardcore leftists who refuse to listen to Republicans, who have then walked out. And like King George, Governor Kate Brown has called out the state police to arrest the opposition. So on that issue, though, of wanting representation, there are three facts specifically that they mention in the declaration. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved them when they oppose the king and refused to cause others to be elected. So what was going on there? What kind of games was the king playing?
Well, the king was appointing overseers, essentially, who were, you know, through patronage, these were, loyalists to the crown, who would set up governments in Boston or Philadelphia. And then if you were a outlying colony, you'd have to travel into those towns in order to talk to British authorities. So there was not this tradition of self-government that even back to the Pilgrims, Americans had, where they were able to gather together into small groups and communities and make, you know, decisions like we did with the Mayflower Compact. So it was a complete antithesis to what colonial America was used to. Colonial America was used to the town hall, having a town meeting, gathering on the town square, having your ability to talk about local issues, and then to elect a town council that would essentially make those decisions. And so to move this away to a place like Boston or Philadelphia, where the British had an appointee who would decide, was very inconvenient. And of course, was the antithesis to self-government.
Well, it just reminds me of today's government that they're just constantly playing games, making it difficult for people to be involved. And one of the other things that was actually really important then and now is the notion of immigration. But back in the colonial times, the U.S. was hungry for more immigrants. Now we have too many coming in and no control over it. The Founding Fathers mentioned this also in the Declaration when they said, quote, he has endeavored to prevent the population of these states. For that purpose, obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migration thither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. So what was the king doing here, especially this notion of raising the conditions of new appropriations of land?
Well, after the French and Indian War, it became very clear to the powers in London that they did not want additional French people in North America. And so they had a real problem after British Canada and French Canada fought it out, and eventually, you know, the British won. They were worried about additional European migration that would change the political composition of the colonies. Hmm. So in order to keep the colonies under control, they did not want additional French people. And they went to great extent to move the French out of Canada to kind of get rid of the French problem. And so, of course, we know the story of the Acadians who were sent to Louisiana, you know, became the Cajuns. But the whole idea was to control immigration so you could control who the political, you know, who were involved in the political system in colonial America.
Definitely echoes of today. Okay, let's go and take a break there. We'll talk about the Declaration of Independence with Greg Leo. Stay tuned. We'll come back with more of those facts that the Founding Fathers have put into evidence. It is our annual 4th of July show, our 9th annual, if you can believe it. If you've heard our previous shows, you know that for a long time in our nation's history, a big part of 4th of July celebrations around the country involved actually reading the document that launched it all, the Declaration of Independence. And if you're familiar with the Declaration, you know it didn't just say, see you later, England. It gave not only defense of inalienable human rights, which is probably the most famous lines, but a long list of grievances against the Crown and the facts to back up their claims. So this year, we're looking into some of those facts and what was going on to create such a horrible situation that our Founding Fathers felt they had no other choice than to go to war with the most powerful nation on earth. And we're doing that with Greg Leo. He's a political consultant and member of the Reagan administration and our annual guest for the 4th of July. And Greg, you were saying during the break there that you actually served as the congressional appointee for the INS, the Immigration Naturalization.
Yes. So the American system of immigration has always been an issue. It is throughout our history. And so who becomes an American has always been a political question. So if you look at the Constitution, there is one element about naturalization. That is how aliens become naturalized American citizens. But aside from that, it's always been a creature of the Congress. So the Congress can decide. So throughout our history, we've had the Alien and Sedition Acts, which were really about the response to the French Revolution. We've had the Chinese Exclusion Acts, which was really about racism and about, you know, whether or not Chinese people would be admitted to the country. We had 33 grounds of exclusion that excluded various, you know, people who had everything from disease to, you know, what occupations they had, et cetera. So we've always had a Congress that has been defining who would come to America. And it has been a quintessential American question throughout the history of our republic. So this is not a new debate for America.
No,
it's a very important debate because it determines who Americans will be in the future.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned the grounds for exclusion and in doing some family history research. I found that one of my great grandmothers, I think, she was actually held in quarantine, and there was some concern that she had some kind of disease that they wouldn't let her actually pass. And imagine that. You've come all the way to America. You've made it to the gates, literally, and they said, you need to hold on a second here to make sure that you're safe to pass. Certainly a very different day back then. And, you know, one of the main issues that the king was trying to do was he was overwhelming the colonists with government. We mentioned that about the taxes earlier. But, you know, it's kind of amazing to look back and think that even in 1776, there was the issue of big government. And the Declaration offers the following, quote, "He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance." So what exactly was going on there? What kinds of bureaucrats was he sending to harass the colonists, and what were they doing?
Customs people to put duties on, you know, various kinds of imports, and a way to raise taxes to bring it back into the Crown's treasury, and then troops. When they sent the troops were quartered in homes. There were not barracks, et cetera, for the troops. And so you'd literally have two or three British soldiers living in your house with you. And, of course, while they're there, everything was commandeered. And so they would just eat your food if you had your food. If you were a farmer and you put away food for the winter, the troops could come and confiscate that food and then quarter their troops in your homes. And this was oppressive. It was also political. They pick the, free thinkers in each of the villages to go put the troops in their homes as a way to show that, if you started to, agitate too much or too community involved, then it'd be your house that would be picked to quarter the troops. And so in studying British history, we saw what they did to the Scots only 200 years earlier in the Wars for Scottish Freedom, and how they completely killed off the clans, and then you had a policies to make sure that the Scottish clans would not rise again, similarly with the Welsh. So the American Revolution and the kind of tyranny that we saw here, actually there was tradition of the British Crown really to subjugate people who were English-speaking, who had all of the rights in theory of Englishmen, but actually turned out to be prisoners in their own countries.
Well, and the founding fathers were such avid students of history. I'm sure that when they saw what the king was doing there, in their own towns and villages, I'm sure that they were very keenly aware of what had been done previously. And I think a lot of people were probably familiar with the quartering aspects of things, but there's also this argument that they raise, quote, "He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures, and he has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states." So what's that last bit about these mock trials?
Well, we had the Boston Massacre, in which the Sons of Liberty, essentially threw ice and snowballs and the like at the British. There was a killing of, colonial Sons of Liberty folks who were protesting the stamp tax and this tax on paper and eventually tea. And then there was a trial. And of course, famously, John Adams, who Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration, he was actually the attorney for the British soldiers that were eventually acquitted. And so there were a series of these mock trials whenever there was an atrocity that the British soldiers had against the colonials. They would have a mock trial where the officers, they would use like military justice, and the officers would then render the opinion. So it was not trial by jury. It was not one where the community actually judged it. So the system, the British system of law, it was broken down and really substituted with martial law. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're talking about there.
Well, as I understand it too, this mock trial was also part of the Intolerable Acts, and as part of that, it said that it empowered the Massachusetts governor to transfer either to Britain or to another colony for trial any official or soldier accused of capital crime if he thought that they could not expect a fair trial in Massachusetts. And it's just interesting to see those Intolerable Acts on so many levels. They closed the Boston port and essentially blockaded it until the East India Company could be repaid for losses during the Boston Tea Party. It even got to the point where you couldn't hold a town meeting without the prior written consent of the Massachusetts governor. And it sounded like you could pop him an email.
All of these things ended up, of course, being corrected in our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and the freedom of assembly and freedom of speech, trial by jury, Fourth Amendment search and seizure, provisions that you don't quarter troops. All of these came out of this horrible experience of British occupation of colonial America.
Yes. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back, we'll continue this with Greg Leo. We're looking at the Declaration of Independence on our annual 4th of July show. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is our annual 4th of July show. We always are very pleased to be joined by Greg Leo. He's kind of our in-house historian, or at least that's how we like to think of him. And Greg is a government and public affairs consultant to governments, tribes, corporations, and individuals. If you need some help dealing with government, perhaps they've singled out your company for some new regulation, he is the one to call. His website is theleocompany.com, and you can reach him at greg@theleocompany.com. And, Greg, we're talking during the break there about this notion of tyranny. And it's really interesting to look back is that if the king hadn't been such an overbearing tyrant, the citizens probably would have found some sort of way to deal with things. And, it's difficult, but he was just did, as you said, he did what all tyrants do, which is they just become overbearing. They push it too far. And I really do
exactly
think,
right.
Yeah, I really do think that we're seeing that play out right now here in Oregon. You've got these Republican senators that have fled the building because they're in the minority, and the majority is being heavy-handed with them. The governor called out the cops to arrest them, and this is tyranny in action, and it's a minority group trying to have a say. And it was awesome to see several thousand people show up at the Capitol building on Thursday to demand to be heard. And I think that's just a little snippet of what we can imagine the revolution was like when you had that minority of people saying enough is enough, we're not going to be treated this way anymore.
Yeah, well, to the revolution, you know, a less than 10% of colonial America supported the revolution in 1776. So it was really a very small number, and really, you know, most colonial people didn't pay attention. Kind of like today, half the people don't pay attention to politics. And the people that did pay attention, most of them felt like, well, we just want to have our rights represented.
Yeah, just want to be respected.
Make sure we have, yeah, we want to have the rights of free Englishmen as, you know, originally established by the Magna Carta. So, you know, this idea of these inalienable human rights, that is the big idea in the Declaration. That was really a minority opinion of, you know, a few intellectuals like Jefferson and Adams who wrote that. But it was a very big idea. And of course, that's the lasting idea. The rest of the document is really what I call a political bloody shirt. Look at what the king is doing to us. Yes. And here is why we need to be independent.
Yes. Well, speaking of things that the king has done to us, they absolutely resented his heavy-handedness, especially the use of military force. And one of the facts that they mentioned in the Declaration of Independence was this, quote, he has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt down our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. You know, we know about the more famous armed skirmishes prior to 1776. You had the Boston Massacre. You had Lexington and Concord. That took place on April 19th, a full year before the Declaration of Independence. But what's this about ravaging the coasts and burning towns? Had things really gone that far?
It really had. And a lot of it was the British tax collectors' war on smuggling and making sure people like, you know, John Hancock were not able to smuggle in, you know, cargo that did not pay duty. But remember, the same week that the declaration was signed, Admiral Howe was landing on Staten Island. So the invasion of America was underway right when the Declaration was written, and it was very alarming for Americans. So the concurrent nature of, you know, larger British military presence attacking New York, not just Boston, at the same time as the Declaration, I think, added fuel to the fire. So it was extremely timely. But there had been a number of atrocities, especially as it related to trade, but specifically in New England, against places that the British saw as kind of hotbeds for smuggling, that, you know, caused that particular grievance in the document.
So the Declaration of Independence was not just signed there in Philadelphia. They actually sent a copy of it to the king. In fact, Trump, when he was in London recently, actually got to see that copy. That's pretty awesome. Within the Declaration, there's this long list of grievances that, you know, we've been talking about here. When that arrived in England, do you think the average Englishman knew anything about all of those atrocities?
No, they did not. And really, the Crown was not too happy about this, obviously. And there was a group of folks led by Penn in the Parliament that was saying, no, this was an overreach, that the tax acts had been too strong, that there'd been too much push to try to pay the costs of the previous war, and that it was really similar to the problems that they had previously had in Scotland and Wales. And so there was an anti-war, crackdown on the colonials that was completely overrun by the king. The king himself was infuriated, and that's when he sent the troops there in a big way. And of course, at the time, the British military was the strongest in the world, not just their navy,
That's right.
but their army. And their army was well-schooled in tactics of occupation and subjugation of, you know, indigenous folks and, you know, people in colonial situations. So,
well, it's amazing to think what they knew that they were putting themselves up against is that, as you say, they were the strongest army in the world. And yet here are these little 13 colonies saying enough is enough. We have been pushed to the limit and we're not going to take it anymore. If it means laying down our lives, we will do that.
And 40 years earlier, they had annihilated the Scotch clans in the Highlands. Hmm. So, you know, they were excellent at occupation and at making sure that you got the ringleaders arrested and executed, put on prison ships, deported to England to serve hard time. And they were really good at jackbooted tactics. The problem was with a free and independent American people, we were self-sufficient and were able, you know, to take care of ourselves. We're good marksmen, had Kentucky rifles. We're not going to really take it because we had been so independent for so long. So the difference between the Welsh and the Scots and the Americans were the Americans had the means to fight, whereas the Scots, after you know, that the major battle 40 years earlier, were not able to resist.
Mm. Mm. Well, they certainly knew it was to either fight now or be killed now. So you can certainly see why they took the tact that they did. All right, let's go ahead and take a break there because we want to continue this notion with the military force and tyranny. We're talking today about the Declaration of Independence and some of the arguments that our founding fathers put forward as to why they needed to go take up arms against the biggest nation on earth at the time. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's our annual 4th of July show, our 9th annual, if you can believe that. We're talking with Greg Leo. He is our in-house historian here on iSpy Radio. He's also a consultant, political consultant. If you'd like to get a hold of him, if you need his help, you can reach him at theleocompany.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. And Greg, going on to that last segment there, we were talking about the tyranny of the king. And you know, it just really came, push came to shove when they realized that he was building up the army there on the continent. They were moving in mercenaries. And to that point, they bring up this fact in the declaration, quote, "He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with the circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. And he has excited domestic insurrections amongst us, and he has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions." So, you know, all of these obviously have to deal with actual force being used and acts of war and aggression. And this really just, you know, as you read that paragraph, you can really get the sense that this is the final straw. This is the tipping point. But, you know, I don't think a lot of people really realize that the king was actually fomenting rebellion within the colonists against the Patriots.
Well, it did exactly what you don't want to have. And that is make martyrs and patriots of people with legitimate grievances. I mean, they had really excellent grievances that could have been listened to, moderated. There could have been a little, you know, some relaxation of the taxes. There could have been, you know, a non-voting representative taken to parliament. There could have been a number of things aside from, you know, a strong military response. But he was, you know, he had already subjugated Boston. Mm-hmm. And Boston was in full revolt. Howe was landing to take New York City, did take it, held it for a number of years. They're trying to split the colonial, you know, the colonies in half along the Hudson River, which was their battle plan for, you know, sectionally dividing. So what the declaration did was it united the patriots and the martyrs together. Mm-hmm. So this document really is what in the Civil War times we would call the bloody shirt, that you wave at the community and say, look what they're doing to us. We need to get together and fight the tyranny. Mm-hmm. And that's the impact it had politically in 1776.
Oh, absolutely. And You mentioned the king did what tyrants should never do, which is to make martyrs of people, especially of the patriots. And you kind of get that sense here with this as well. Quote, "For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of governments." I mean, tyrants change laws. That's why they're tyrants, is they establish a law and then, oops, they change it to fit their own means. And but what exactly was the king, what exactly were the colonists referring to in this particular paragraph?
Well, they took away all the civil rights of self-government, basically. Mm. I mean, and they put people from England over them. And then, of course, it was all about taking their resources and subjugating their freedom. And so all those things coalescing at once were the intolerable acts that, caused the revolution. And so, one thing that Jefferson, famous quote, he says, "From time to time, the tree of liberty must be watered by the blood of tyrants and martyrs." So, and it's a very serious, sobering kind of quote that if you are going to truly have freedom, from time to time, the oppressor and the patriot will need to die in order to make sure that liberty prospers.
Hmm. Early in the Declaration, that's really what gets so much of the attention, it seems, this time of year, is this notion of inalienable rights. That we are endowed with rights by our Creator, and that people like the king govern with the consent of the governed, of the people themselves. Talk to us a little bit about what a novel idea that was, because hear some echoes, I guess, of the Declaration within the 1689 Bill of Rights over in England that they had passed. They just came out of their own Civil War, and so I think you hear some elements of that, but not quite the way that Jefferson and Adams put it.
Well, and this is really the rise of humanism, and that individual people have civil rights, that they have that individual people have the right to self-government, and that the franchise of government comes from the people, not down from the king to the people. And so it's kind of they start with the Magna Carta, where, the king does not have absolute power. But this is radical because it takes it the other direction. It says all of our rights come from the Creator. They're given to individuals, and then individuals have the right to form together to cause government to happen in order to meet our needs. It's not the other way around, we exist for the benefit of government. Government exists for the benefit of the people. It's really the big idea in the Declaration, and it's the idea which differentiates America from every other form of government on earth.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a celebration every year at the 4th of July up at Shampooey Park, and I know that's one of the big things that you guys do up there is that you hand out portions of the Declaration, and individuals will read many of the same things that we're reading, all of those things that we're reading today. So what's it like for people to actually hear those words, and what are their reactions like?
It's invigorating, and it's spirited, and it's a lot of fun. So we take the Declaration, and we cut out 42 lines. So we take the entire document, cut it up into 42 pieces, and then 42 citizens step up to the microphone and read that particular part of it. And so it's been the most popular thing we do on the 4th of July at Shampooey Park for the last 10 years. It's very participatory, and people kind of get into the dramatic reading of those grievances. And there are certain lines like taxation or like plundering in the high seas that always get like applause, that, people just say, yeah, and then people are kind of egging people on, but that's right, spirit of freedom, that kind of thing. And so reading this document, it is a live, living document, and we took that part of the ceremony right out of American history, because that is exactly what colonial people did in the town squares once they got the Declaration.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming back, what do you know about the deleted paragraph from the Declaration of Independence? Stay with us. This is the iSpy Radio Show, and it's our annual 4th of July show. We're our ninth annual, which I can hardly believe, or hardly say, actually. We're talking with Greg Leo. He is our historian for these shows. He's been with us ever since year one. Greg is a government and public affairs consultant. If you need some help dealing with government, We all do, it seems. You can reach him at greg@theleocompany.com. We'll link that up on ispyradio.com. And Greg, going on to that last segment there, is teasing this notion that there was a deleted paragraph from the Declaration of Independence. And I raise this in part anyway, because right now there's this notion of reparations, and I think our founding fathers sometimes get this knock that, oh, well, they were these rich white guys who owned slaves, including Jefferson, who was actually the author of this. But there was a paragraph dealing with slavery in the original first draft of the Declaration of Independence itself, and apparently it sent off a firestorm of debate among the delegates. And this is it. It says, "He has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. This piratical warfare, the opprobrium of infidel powers, is the warfare of the Christian king of Great Britain, determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold. He has prostituted his negative for suppressing every legislative attempt to prohibit or restrain this execrable commerce, and that this assemblage of horrors might want no fact of distinguished dye. He is now exciting these very people to rise in arms against us and among us, and to purchase that liberty of which he has deprived them by murdering the people on whom he has obtruded them, thus paying off former crimes committed against the liberties of one people with crimes which he urges them to commit against the lives of another." And we'll link that up on ispyradio.com, because it's kind of a tough paragraph to go through, and you can see from editing purposes why they maybe had deleted that. But it's this note, you can feel that jab there when they say, yeah, this piratical warfare, it's the warfare of the Christian king of Great Britain, and yet he's been pushing slavery on people.
That's right. And there was not agreement at the convention where they were meeting in Philadelphia. The southern states, of course, their agricultural economy was based on slavery. And this was a deal breaker. And so it dropped out. Of course, it's the great flaw in our Constitution. It had to be corrected by the Civil War, a great, yes, blood and, sacrifice by the whole country. And so it was, like any political document, the Declaration is a compromise, and this dropped out. And I think, Adams especially, but, to a large degree, Jefferson, who was a slaveholder, right, knew that this was wrong. And calling out the British when Americans themselves held slaves would have been the hypocrisy.
Right, right. And so, you can really see why they would have deleted that. But it's interesting that gets overshadowed. Because I think people are right, as they say, well, how can somebody that's a slave owner himself have penned such glorious words talking about the inherent freedom of mankind, that we are endowed with these rights by our Creator, and yet he was a slave owner. Jefferson was a very complex person.
Yeah, we all have to learn to walk the walk. I mean, we may know what is right, but we may not be able to do what is right. And that was the essential problem with slavery. And like you say, it needed to be corrected. So I think they knew it was wrong. But then to call the king out on it when America itself had a slave economy in many parts of it would have been divisive. And what they're trying to do is unite these colonies together, as opposed to dividing them along, economic and kind of lines of slavery.
Do you think there was an element of, well, we need to deal with the big issue first, which is to get us out from under the thumb of the king, and then we'll deal with slavery? Or because you can kind of wonder what would have happened if they had the southern slaveholding states, which, although, if you actually research some of why Jefferson deleted that, or why it was deleted, was apparently because it was actually a bipartisan issue. It wasn't just the slaveholders that wanted it removed, but there was people in the North profiting from slavery that wanted that removed. And so you can
see the ship owners and the ones who would transport.
Well, you can certainly see why they may have wanted to save that for a later date. The big thing right now is we've got to get our freedom, and then we'll deal with that issue. And I think they all knew that sooner or later that was going to come.
Well, and the troops were landing. I mean, the British troops were landing. It was clear that this was moving into a full-on war, and there had to be a rally point. The declaration provided that, you know, and allowed people in Boston who had already been at war for a while needed to have the support of the other colonial powers. Of course, this gave rise to the George Washington's Continental Army, was able to recruit, you know, patriots from all over the East and then send them up north to fight there in Boston, eventually to fight then in New York, and then towards the end of the war to take the war to the South and finally, you know, push Cornwallis down the James River Peninsula to Yorktown.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, I mean, it's a long, bloody war. It's 8 years. It was near, if it had not been for the French, we would not have won it. It is, in a way, is a miracle that the American, you know, nation was born out of that bloody cauldron of the Revolutionary War. But if you don't study the Revolution and the reasons for it, you will not understand America. And this is why the idea of American freedom is so important. But to know these documents and the reasons behind them give you a fresh and strong perspective about how we have freedoms and how important they are.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were won with the blood of patriots. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming back, we'll wrap things up with Greg Leo on our annual 4th of July show. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're into our final segment now with Greg Leo. We've been dissecting the Declaration of Independence, and we'll have this up as soon as possible on iSpyRadio.com, so that way if you'd like to listen to it again, you can certainly download it from there. And we're talking with Greg Leo. He is a political consultant, and if you need some help dealing with the government, you can reach him at theleocompany.com, and that will be up on iSpyRadio.com as well. And Greg, we were talking during the break there about some of the miracles, really, that happened within the war. And it's interesting that the Founding Fathers mentioned God as really the primary reason for declaring independence, this notion of inalienable human rights, that we are endowed with these rights from our Creator. And you saw that all throughout the war, this divine intervention. I remember one of the episodes that always jumps out at me as there was a British sniper in a tree. He had a general who was in his sights. He could have taken him out, and yet he came. There was such a regal air about him. It was almost like he felt compelled not to take the shot. And it turns out that was Washington.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many different times when you have to just think it was divine intervention. I'm thinking of, you know, the retreat from Staten Island, where Washington barely got the troops out just because there was a fog, and he had some Gloucester fishermen who could row the remnants of the Continental Army off of Staten Island. There are just many, many different occasions where we should have lost the war, and that the Continental Army was so beleaguered, you know, almost was extinct at Valley Forge, turned around and, you know, beat the Hessians. It's just really a very miraculous thing. And so the even fact that we were able to get Cornwallis down the James Peninsula there, and then the Battle of the Virginia Capes, where the French fleet actually defeated the world famous and very strong British Navy, so they couldn't get Cornwallis. That was the key thing that helped us negotiate the Peace of Paris and end the Revolutionary War. So every step of the way, the Creator. So when we see in God we trust on our money, just know that it is backed up by a lot of things, which really you have to look at as I think, divine intervention.
Hmm. Well, like you say, we really should not have won the war, given who we were going up against and our own position. We were just a bunch of farmers, essentially. You know, these people out on the frontiers, and they had their hunting rifles, and yet we were going up against the most powerful nation on earth. It really is a miracle that we won that. And as you mentioned, there's really the need to know history, because we see it played out in today's world. You understand the cry for justice, the cry for freedom, the cry for liberty that so many people around the world have, that they're expressing, and they look to America as that shining city on the hill, that bastion of freedom. You know, that's why so many come here, is because they're oppressed and want that slice of the American pie. I think that's what draws so many people here. It's not just the fact that we've got free handouts. It's the fact that you can come here and really make something of yourself. But you don't appreciate that if you really don't know that history. And certainly within this notion of tyranny, you know, we've got the Oregon governor calling out the state police because the minority Republicans are taking the last straw that they had was to be able to leave the building and not go through this vote for House Bill 2020, the cap and trade bill. I mean, you see so much of similarities to what was happening then with the King's Justice and what you're seeing now.
Our system of laws is really based on our inalienable rights as citizens. And that we have the power of self-government and self-determination. It's a remarkable idea that has really never been replicated any place else in the world. Yeah. And the rest of the world wants that kind of human freedom and recognition, the ability to assemble in groups, have free speech, practice religion as you see fit.
Yep.
They're fundamental to who we are as people. And
absolutely,
they're worth fighting for. If we don't understand how we got them, then it's going to be very hard to keep them in place over the long term.
You've got to know why you fight for these things. Real quick, Greg, just 30 seconds. You have an event up at Champoui. Why don't you give that a plug?
We are. The Daughters of the American Revolution have historic Newell Pioneer Village on the 4th of July. We've got a great party planned. We've got the Bluegrass Band Corral Creek coming into play, and then we're going to read the Declaration, where 42 people will get up and read a line from it. We've got American History Bee, and we're going to be singing patriotic songs, all of which to celebrate our freedom on Independence Day at Newell House at Champoui Park in northern Marion County.
And we'll link details to that on iSmartRadio.com. Greg, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This is always fun, and we look forward to next year.
Celebrate freedom. Enjoy your Independence Day.
If you're hearing this the weekend before July 4th, the celebration on July 4th at the historic Newell House in Champoui Park is from 2:30 to 6, with the Independence Day program running from 4 to 6. If you're hearing this the weekend after July 4th, Champoui Park is still a great place to go learn a little history. Find out more at newellpioneervillage.com or iSpyRadio.com. The grassroots scored a victory to kill the carbon cap and raid bill. No, I'm not mispronouncing that. Cap and raid bill. But we're not out of the woods. We'll deal with that when we come back. But for now, a big shout out to all the grassroots who showed up, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. And likewise, freedom only means something if you're willing to defend it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.